Michael Casey, it's getting chilly. It's Halloween season. I can't wait to talk about some horror films. But first, let's talk about the new film out in theaters this week. It's Bergman Island.
Yeah, definitely want to talk about this one. This is the latest drama from French filmmaker Mia Hansen-Love. And this is a movie that's set on the island of Faro, which is located in the Baltic Sea off the coast of Sweden. Now, this is not a very big island. It's about 44 square miles. But it's had one very notable resident that has made it famous, which is why our couple has come here to stay for a few weeks, because they are two filmmakers and they are going to be living in the residency of filmmaker Ingmar Bergman's home. And if the name Ingmar Bergman is unknown to you, he was a filmmaker of Swedish descent. He worked in the theater, he made operas, but he also really changed the course of like cinematic expression and the way we watch movies and what movies are about. In the 1950s and the 60s, we're talking about titles like Persona, Seventh Seal, Through a Glass Darkly, Winter Light. I mean, just some spectacular films. And he's a world filmmaker. Like, he's known all the world around. He has influenced so many different filmmakers. So it kind of seems weird to suggest that he's like a cult filmmaker, but he definitely has a cult following. And it appears from this movie that the entire island of Faro that he lived on is just one big Bergman museum. You can stay in his house, you can work in his study, you can visit his office, you can watch Ingmar Bergman movies in his personal Ingmar Bergman screening room. And actually, the projectionist has a seat saved for the ghost of Ingmar Bergman. So when you watch his movies, you get to watch it with him. You can even go on a guided Bergman safari tour where they point out where all of his different movies were shot. And there's even a Bergman museum with a Bergman gift shop where you can buy the sunglasses that B.B. Anderson wore when they shot Persona. So like, this whole island is steeped in this one man's mythos, which is just wild, because I can't really think of any other correlation to any other filmmaker in any other nationality elsewhere. George Lucas's Skywalker's Ranch in California kind of comes close, but they didn't actually like shoot Star Wars there. So it's not really the same thing. And then the biggest physical manifestation we have to celebrate movies in this country is Disneyland. But again, like, Walt didn't actually make movies there. So Faro is a little bit different. And that is why our couple has come here. They want to get what Werner Herzog kind of calls the voodoo of location. And they are Chris, played by Vicky Creeps, and Tony, played by Tim Roth. They're in a relationship. They have a child together, but I don't think they're married. They probably have some sort of open arrangement there. They're both working on screenplays at the time. And they're kind of hoping that if they hang around Bergman's old stomping grounds, it might inspire something in them. Now, I'm sure you can guess at this point that if there's any fans of Bergman out there, that they're going to get a real kick out of Bergman Island. But I definitely want to point out that this is not a movie that you need to see his movies to really understand. If you've never seen a Bergman movie, Bergman Island is still going to work, because it does a really good job of explaining all your major reference points and making sure that the jokes are accessible. And there's a lot of jokes here. But this is also a movie that wants to discuss something very universal, and that's love and sex and relationships and where those things intersect and where they don't, which is really what a lot of Bergman movies were about. So it's a good fit here. I think it's really effective. As I mentioned, Chris and Tony are on the island to work, and Hansen-Love sets it up so that you kind of think that Tony is the Bergman acolyte, that he's maybe dragging Chris along for the ride. But as the movie progresses, it becomes apparent that the real Bergman fan of the two is Chris and not Tony. Tony's more of a popcorn horror kind of filmmaker. And the script that Chris is working on feels at home on Faro much more than anything Tony could possibly dring up. And the movie that Chris is working on, Hansen-Love does show us, is about a 20-something-year-old woman played by Mia Wasikowska coming to Faro for a wedding and running into an old flame. Now, there's a movie within a movie aspect of it. There's a little bit of doubling going on. It works really well because Wasikowska is really great in these scenes, and Vicky Creeps and Tim Roth are really good in their scenes. And it's believable the way they overlap and intersect in kind of this mystery, sort of this mysterious kind of way. It's not like a puzzle box that you need to solve. You just kind of roll with the punches and it works out really well. And I think one of the things I really liked about this movie that I really responded to is that all three of these actors do a really good job of pretending like they're listening to someone else talk when you know that what they're really doing is thinking about themselves, and not like listening to figure out where the pause is so that they can interject, but so much as how does what this person is saying apply to me. It's they're very absorbed. Bergman was very absorbed in himself. So like, you just got all these kind of interesting layers to it. And just like I said, you don't need to know the Bergman movies to get Bergman Island. You also don't have to know Mia Hansen's love movies to really understand that this is a very personal work, that this is coming from a place of maybe autobiography, especially when it comes to like the romantic relationships and the spaces that they inhabit and don't inhabit when you're a creative type. It's really good stuff. And I'll be honest with you, this movie really makes me want to go visit Poro myself. I'm not sure if that's what Hansen love is going for, but those limestone beaches sure do look cool. And what film lover wouldn't want to go on a Bergman safari? I mean, come on. So if that sounds like your cup of tea, I recommend Bergman Island. It is playing this week at the Esquire Theater in Denver. But if you're not close to the Esquire Theater or if you're not feeling like coming out, it will be available on VOD starting October 22nd.
Well, it is now Halloween season, which means bring out some great horror films and slasher films. And you've got a personal favorite you want to talk about.
Yeah, I want to talk about 1981's The Howling, because this is one of those rare horror comedies that is both heavy on horror and heavy on comedy. The fact that it can pull off both of them sometimes in the same scene feels like a feat. And it's also a really great werewolf movie. This is a movie about werewolves where you actually see one of the transformations of the werewolves, but it's not hidden by like camera tricks and it's not done by cuts. It's done in just kind of this very factual way. Rob Bottin is the creature effects on this one. And he uses like these air compressors and these weird like practical effects that are just really fantastic. But I'm getting ahead of myself. We need to talk a little bit about what The Howling is. And The Howling is actually apparently comes from a very humorless novel that was adapted by Joe Dante and John Sayles. John Sayles wrote the screenplay and Joe Dante is the director. And I guess the original material was just stiff as a board. So they just swung for the fences on this one. And it's set in 1981 Los Angeles. And our main character is Karen, played by Dee Wallace. She's a TV news anchor and she's being stalked by a sexual predator. And after a really close call, she's sent up to the coast of California to the Self-Actualization Center to recover. And while she's there, she figures out, and it doesn't take a whole lot, it's another huge mystery, but she figures out that the colony that she's at is actually a bunch of werewolves. That's definitely where the comedy part of this story comes in, because Dante and Sayles have a lot of fun poking at the vapid kind of me generation of the 70s, whether it's the pseudo-Dianetics idea of self-actualization, or this whole industry of self-help, even just silly things like werewolves reading Allen Ginsberg's Howl. I mean, those are the kind of moments in the movie that you chuckle at, but you also really appreciate that the filmmakers went for that kind of laugh. Now, where the horror elements come in is both in the forms of sexual assault and excessive force by police officers. And I think it's the fact that Sayles and Dante understand where comedy ends and horror begins that really does make this movie effective. And that even though it was made in 1981, we're talking about 40 years have passed and that these horror elements of the movie still really resonate with what's going on in our contemporary society. And that's really what gives this movie its bite. It's also great just to see the practical effects of these things. Like now these transformations are all done digitally, or they're done just kind of off camera sort of thing. It's fascinating to watch what real makeup artists and like special effects can do when they're just kind of given this carte blanche. It's a really great watch. It's a really fun watch. It's a really good watch. I think you should check it out. It's available now to rent on Amazon. But a few years ago, they put together a really good Blu-ray that has great commentaries, great behind the scenes making of documentaries that talk about putting together the movie, how the effects were done, the story decisions that were made. Dante and Sayles are wonderful people to listen to just to talk about how movies are made, why decisions are made, the history of movies and how the movies that they make play off of the history of film studios. You gotta want to check that one out. That is available probably at your library, so give it a look.
And for folks who are craving more horror, streaming horror, there's a brand new service out to cater to their interests. It is Kino Cult.
Yeah, this is from the makers behind Kino Lorber. They're a library of titles that they've been putting out, Blu-rays and DVDs for years. And they have a really extensive catalog, so much so that they went ahead and they have a specialty service that they're calling Kino Cult. It's out now. It is online. It's on Rokus and Fire Sticks and all those good things. And they have just a smattering of just kind of off the beaten path movies. If you're looking for a great place to start, I suggest A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. It's an Iranian vampire flick from about 5 or 6 years ago. I think it's really great. There's all kinds of like 70s and 80s slasher movies, some exploitation films, some real B stuff on here. They have a whole section devoted strictly to Mario Bava, great Italian filmmaker, especially when it comes to your slasher kind of giallo stuff. So Black Sunday, Black Sabbath, Bay of Blood, all that good stuff. You want to check those ones out. They've got occult movies. They've got hardcore kind of horror movies, House of a Thousand Eyes, if you're really feeling into it. Like, there's just a lot of really great stuff. They also, if you're not into horror, they also have some crime. They've got classics up there that have probably just been in the public domain. If you've never seen Metropolis, you definitely got to check that one out. And they got some really interesting documentaries. Tower, which was about the school shooting at the University of Texas, Austin, back in the 60s. Keith Maitland's the director of that, took a really interesting approach to that. That is also available on KinoCoco. It is Yorgos Lanthimos's very bizarre, very strange Dogtooth, kind of a horror movie in itself. So I definitely think you want to give this one a look because there's some great stuff out here. Like I said, if you're looking for something to start with tonight, go with A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. It's moody, it's sexy, it's hip. Black and white photography is really cool. That's at KinoCult.com.
Well, Michael Casey, for more information about you and for your reviews, where can people go?
You want to go to MichaelJCinema.com. There's lots of reviews of movies that are coming out now, what are available in theaters and on streaming. You can go to BoulderWeekly.com online worldwide, or if you're in Boulder County, you can go ahead and pick up the paper. This week, we have an article previewing the Denver Film Festival. We'll be talking a lot more about that coming up on After Image. And you definitely want to check back with us next week because we're going to try to do a horror movie each week. And next week, we're going to have one from Sergio Martino, a great giallo classic. So we'll see you then.